Welcome to Public Safety Talk Radio, the podcast for all of our heroes in public safety, including law enforcement professionals, firefighters, EMTs, corrections officers, healthcare workers, and more. This show is produced by the POCUA and is founded upon its Soundness Initiative.
This episode is sponsored by Police Mortgage. Police Mortgage is a full-service mortgage company dedicated to serving police officers and first responders. Founded in 2008, Police Mortgage offers a variety of mortgage products tailored to meet the needs of those who serve and protect. Police Mortgage, for first responders who are second to none.
I am Ken Bader, your host for Public Safety Talk Radio, and this is a treat. It's not that often I get to talk to two great people on multiple occasions, but heck, that is happening today. If some of you may know Dr. Scott and Dr. Shiloh from LA, Not So Confidential, great hosts of a great podcast. I know all of you in the audience have already read the great article that some writer wrote for Podcast Magazine a year and a half ago, something like that. But now you get to see and hear them directly on Public Safety Talk Radio. Very, very quickly, Dr. Shiloh is a former police officer. Let me dig into that. She is currently a law enforcement psychologist in Los Angeles. And Dr. Scott is licensed in the state of California as both a clinical psychologist and a marriage and family therapist. God knows I probably need that sometimes. But Dr. Shiloh, Dr. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ken. This isn't the same Thanks. Not being in Vegas.
I know. The reference is to CrimeCon, where I did my first interview with these two great individuals. Didn't get to go to CrimeCon. Did you go to CrimeCon this year?
No, it's happening in September this year. It's in Orlando.
That's right. I hate Orlando. That's why I'm not going.
We have very similar thoughts.
It's humid. You know, I'm not a kid anymore. I don't have kids. Scott, you probably love Orlando, right?
No, I grew up in the deep south in that humidity. I have desire to ever go back to that again. Never.
You don't miss the humidity.
Plus, we were just in London for CrimeCon UK, which was phenomenal. That was fantastic. Yeah.
And you didn't take me.
Oh shoot!
You know you have an open invitation. Like it's, I think it's kind of at this point. Do you really expect us to? We just expect you to show up.
Well, you know, I mean, Podcast Magazine goes under and then everybody forgets about you. I don't know what to do.
Poor Ken.
Can I get a hug?
Right?
I told you we should have done this in person. But let's get into what is a really intriguing and engaging podcast. I know the story of how the two of you kind of connected and created this show, but my audience may not. So how did the two of you get hooked up as true crime podcasters?
You want me to take it, Scott, or you want it?
Take it away.
Okay.
Somebody take it, okay? Ladies first. Go ahead.
This is the thing. When you have a co-host, you have to sort of, you know, dole out the questions, but then you kind of get sick of answering the same one. You want to like throw it around. No, we, so Scott and I met at our internships in 2008, and we were both finishing up our doctoral degrees and ended up in this location, which was a forensic psych location working in South Los Angeles with, sex offenders getting out of prison. So already sounds wonderful. Fun. I know everyone's incredibly jealous at this point already.
Doesn't everybody grow up to work with sex offenders? That's, you know, I mean, what everybody dreams of.
Yeah. So it was something that I was already had dipped my toe into at a previous internship, and it was new for Scott. But we became fast friends at this wonderful experience, this wonderful internship. Really quick, fast friends, realized we were both, you know, just marching to the beat of a little bit of a different drum, and immediately brought us together. And from that time, we spent holidays together. Our families got together. We went off into different areas after graduation, Scott going into the prison system as a clinician. And myself, I stayed. I stayed.
Hear it now. Dr. Scott went to prison.
I know. Crazy. He did. But I stayed in sex offender work for a long time. And then in 2017, Scott had changed careers a few times under the umbrella of forensic psychology and ended up working in downtown Los Angeles. And I found myself changing directions as well. And I came into being a law enforcement psychologist, and we were working really close together, meaning in like proximity. So we went to lunch one day, and he had got me hooked on podcasts. Of course, he was the guy that had me listen to Serial. And, you know, I listened to a little bit of everything. I wasn't totally immersed in true crime, but I told him, you know, I haven't found any forensic psychology podcasts out there. And I feel like the true crime podcasts are kind of dancing around, talking around this topic a lot, or it's just a lot of hyperbole perhaps on criminal behavior.
Or really incorrect information, like wildly incorrect.
Yeah. That's a
great piece. Wait a minute. Yeah, I covered true crime for 3 years at Podcast Magazine. You're saying that some of the information that some of those podcasts provided was incorrect?
Hard to believe, huh?
Yeah, Wikipedia isn't the best resource that we would advocate as academics. No, one of our taglines includes the fact that we are snarky. So, you know, please, to your audience, take it with a grain of salt. We're not really, you know, like this completely. So we're making fun of the situation. But, you know, I really thought to Scott, or I told Scott, there's a void there where someone doing what we're doing and still working in the field is not really contributing a voice to what we really do. And like, how is it different from a criminal profiler? And, you know, some of the glorifying stuff that comes up in the true crime podcasts. And he was like, no, absolutely not. Like, we cannot start a podcast. We are working full-time jobs and
our side hustles. Yeah.
Yeah. We had private practices on the side and, you know, some consultation gigs going on. And then, you know, because he's the creative, not me, we're like another half block down the street, and he's like, oh, I know, we'll call it LA Not So Confidential. And it was the best, because we worked in LA. There's this piece about, you know, obviously playing off of the Elroy book, LA Confidential. And then there's the confidentiality of, you know, therapy and being a psychologist, right? So it was really kind of perfect. And from there, we just decided, okay, how are we going to craft this podcast? And because we wanted it to be different than the other shows that were out there.
Yeah. And it definitely is different in a good way. But to go back to that lunch where you talked about doing a podcast, who paid for that lunch?
I think that was a coffee. Like, we're usually pretty much Dutch treat.
Yeah.
But we were walking back. I mean, the one thing that she's kind of rewriting very kindly.
You're usually the rewriter.
She's being very kind. Is that she had was really moving up at that other job, and I was the one that knew that a law enforcement psychologist job had opened up, and so I had an ulterior motive. It was like, you are so right for this job. You're so right for this job. They're going to love you. You need to get into this, knowing that she would be four blocks away from my office. So I totally had an ulterior motive, like, to make her, you know, so in making her take that job, I also created this very long commute that she has to do every day, which gives her plenty of opportunities to marinate in plenty of true crime podcasts. So,
yeah, true.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you can get anywhere in LA in like, what, 5 hours?
I have literally worked in every direction from my house, south to Orange County, east to Riverside and San Bernardino. And I might as well go west to downtown LA. But to be close to Scott and to be able to work on a project like this with your best friend is the best decision I ever made, for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it comes through in the podcast. But let's go to, I mean, obviously, like, for instance, before we even press record, you know, Dr. Shiloh wolfed down some tacos for dinner so she could be here. And Dr. Scott said, I got a meeting afterwards because, you know, he's going to go, you know, help somebody else in about an hour or so. So you're fitting this in, which means that, you know, bluntly, I mean, I know a little bit about what both of you do professionally. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it can be stressful. It's taxing. It's a full-time career mentally too. And you, like you said, you got your side hustles, you have your families, and then you put in this little podcast, in all of that. So there's the twofold question is how well can you fit that into your busy schedules? Coupled with, you know, is there some catharsis to that? Is there like, you know, God, you know, it's been a long day. Yeah, I'm glad I get to sit and do the podcast tonight. That there's something psychologically or emotionally that you may be able to work through in some way in doing the podcast. I'll go to Dr. Scott since.
I think everybody's going to have a different story. One of the advantages that Shiloh and I have is that, I never really, in sort of law enforcement terms, I never thought of myself as a hard charger, although I knew from the minute I met Shiloh that she was. But the two of us kind of, I'm more inspired by her. You know, I've had a lot of drive through different periods of my life to explore different careers. I've had basically three different careers. And this is sort of my swan song in the latter third of my life. But we do work full time, and it is, our jobs are fantastic and challenging, and we're very well suited to them in a number of ways. So it's an interesting blend of stress and good stress. You know, I think both of us probably share that, probably in different ways, but we share that little bit of electricity from the stress that we're under kind of keeps us going. It keeps us creative. We're both in situations where we get to come up with ideas for programs, for interventions, for different plans. You know, we both work in tandem with law enforcement, but in different capacities. So finding the time for the podcast was, I think it was simpler when we first started because we were a little bit more laissez-faire about the number of episodes we were doing. We were doing two episodes a month plus two. Then we added two live streams, and it was very, very doable. And then we had an opportunity to sign with a media production company, Glassbox, very, very well-known company. And they were, you know, they've been very, very supportive, but they were very direct saying, look, we would love to work with you, but you have to produce content every week. Right. And we had to have a talk. I mean, we had a long talk about like, can we actually do this? And, you know, at this, I mean, I'm older than Shiloh. I still have a lot of energy, but like, I have a private practice that I love. And, you know, we live in Southern California. We live in one of the most expensive places really in the country. And, you know, keeping your finances going, working a full-time job. I don't know anybody that doesn't have have just one job. Everybody's doing double duty, but we really had a passion for this work, and the rhythm just sort of established itself. It's like, yes, we have an entire G suite of like, you know, our documents, our idea folders. We've got enough ideas to do another 10 years if we had the energy. I mean, we really do, because there's just,
I hope that's the case. I hope I'm around for another 10 years so I can get you back on, but go ahead.
But yeah, I mean, you know, our creative process is we toss around an idea. I mean, it's, what's funny is that we're on the same wavelength so much. It'll be like, I'm just about to text her about an idea I just had, and she's texting me at the same time. And I'm not exaggerating at all. It happens constantly.
Yeah.
And then we'll go, okay, well, what do you want to cover? And she's like, you know what, let me take this, this, and this. And how about you? And I'm like, that's great, because I'll do this, this, and this. And then because we're both huge research addicts, we'll go in. And look, I mean, all joking aside, Wikipedia can actually be a good starting point for research. Sure. if you actually do more than just read the article, if you go down and you look at the sources and you read the sources themselves, that can be great. But Shiloh and I have access to academic journals. We also need, we know how to do deeper searches and look in other areas that are beyond just, you know, the 10th or 11th page of a Google search. So yeah, I mean, it's a rhythm, and it's challenging, but when we sit down, it's a lot of fun. But I'll be the one going, oh God, I can't pull it out today. I just can't. I cannot pull it out today. And the minute we're sitting down in front of the computer and start giggling, I mean, you know, we've got a good like 10 minutes of laughing before we even start recording. So yeah, it's energizing. It's innervating. It's a pretty great process.
Are you looking for a podcast to answer some financial questions? Well, then check out the Mortgage Beat podcast, brought to you by Police Mortgage, for first responders who are second to none. Mortgage Beat gives insight into the home loan process specifically for police officers, firefighters, and other public safety professionals. The podcast is hosted by Police Mortgage CEO John Aritos, who has decades of experience in the mortgage industry. Check out Mortgage Beat on Spotify today.
And there's another aspect to it that emerged completely by surprise. We had no idea that this would happen. I mean, many people who are content creators worry about having what are called parasocial relationships coming at them from their listeners and misinterpretation of relationships. And what's hilarious to me is like, I have completely the opposite. Like I feel like I'm in relationship with our listeners, you know, and we have a really great listener base, and our creation. Oh God, I had a point there. Sorry, my ADHD.
Does he do this afternoon on your podcast too, Dr. Oh, yes.
Completely. Oh, yes. No, this is my life. Anyway, it's gone. It'll probably come back. But so we had this really great interaction back and forth with our listeners that allows us to get feedback. And what I wasn't expecting, see, it only took me a minute to get back on track. What I wasn't expecting is that we would, stay with me for a second, that Shiloh and I would be having our own babies. And we actually are, because we're in this now for 7 years, and we've got a handful of people who altered their career trajectories because of listening to our podcast. They went and they enrolled in doctoral programs to pursue forensic psychology. And a couple of them are graduating, and like two more just this year got accepted to, and they stay in touch with us, and we stay in touch with them, and they ask us questions. And, you know, we've gotten a database of questions now where I'll go, okay, look, I will totally consult with you, but go read everything that we've already done so far. Go read this webpage or something. So to be able to know that you had a real impact on somebody's life that is beyond just knowing that they're listening in the car, or as many people say, and I take it as a compliment, but we have a lot of people that say, I love listening to you as I'm going to sleep.
You know, I've heard
that. Like, am I boring you?
There are people that listen or watch true crime, and it helps them to go to sleep. It's unfathomable to me. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the genre. I covered it for 3 years. I've listened to more different true crime podcasts and shows than probably most human beings.
True.
But you know, I don't want to fall asleep to it. You know, there are times that I need to turn it off, and I've heard and seen quite a bit.
I think it may kind of sort of circle back around to that idea of parasocial relationships, is that one of the things that we hear quite often is that it really comes through, our friendship really comes through. It doesn't seem forced. It seems like over and over again, we hear, you guys really like each other. I'm like, yeah, we do. I would absolutely not do this with somebody I was even ambivalent about. It's like, I've got to really, really like her. I think that's one of the things on top of the research and the entertainment value and the education that people get from listening to us. They like that, you know, here are two good friends that are offering something up.
Yeah.
And I'm the kind of personality that I just want to do all the things. And I know that's not realistic. And I would say if I were interviewing for a job, I would say that's my weakness, you know, is that I want to do all the things and I spread myself too thin sometimes trying to accomplish that. But what this podcast does is it allows Scott and I for 2 weeks, a week or 2 weeks, to dive into this really juicy, interesting subject, look at the research behind it, build an episode around it, and give that to our listeners. And then we're kind of satiated with that. We can move on to the next thing. And we've gotten our little psych research fix. So I don't have to be, you know, kind of pulled in a bunch of different directions, wanting to do all the jobs and all the things. We can do it with the podcast.
It also feels really new every week. I mean, even though it's 150 plus episodes in, everything feels new. And I think that we're suited to that rather. I don't think it would be as easy if we were saying, okay, we're going to do an entire vintage series on the Thelma Todd crimes, you know, and then we do deep research into that particular crime from the 40s and we talk about it for 8 weeks. I think that would exhaust us.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't keep our interest. I mean, we're into all of these things, but we want to find, well, how does our background as psychologists tie into some element of this story? And we want to get in, give you the story, give you all the like really interesting stuff, and then move on and have something else for you new the following week.
Yeah. Yeah. I literally could dig into your podcast for another hour or two, which we kind of did in Las Vegas for Podcast Magazine. Yeah. So, you know, for all of my audience, if you want to dig more into the podcast, go back and read that article or wait until I get both of these great folks on the First and True. I also want to dig into some public safety talk radio stuff, to use a very high MBA term there.
Clearly, yes.
Is, you know, looking as, and you know, as my audience knows, I've never been a first responder, never been a police officer. Just have had the privilege of working with law enforcement in one way, shape, or form for 20 years. So I have a little bit of a different perspective. But it seems to me, and maybe I'm just simply wrong, it seems to me that crime seems to be on the rise. I mean, I grew up in Chicago, lived there for decades. There's a little bit of crime there. All three of us live in the Los Angeles metro area. There's some crime here. But it just seems like there's more crime that's tied to addiction or mental illness and things of that nature. Is that really on the rise? Or is it just simply that we were able to diagnose it better than we were maybe in the 70s, 80s, 90s? Why the one of you dig into that for a little while?
Yeah, you said, well, you weren't going to throw us any curveballs. And,
oh, I sent you the damn questions beforehand.
We're totally good with that.
It's right here.
I'm gonna leave the stats to Shiloh because she knows about that, but I want to offer a really quick framework, and that is that the difference now, which is, I mean, it's not like that it's completely new. I mean, we're going on 3 decades now of a 24-hour news cycle. So the 24-hour news cycle has to be fed. It is not Walter Cronkite delivering the news, signing off, you know, have a good night, we'll, you know, whatever his sign-off line was, which was so beautiful. But, you know, the advent of 24-hour news cycles means that content drives the money-making machine. And that means you have to throw fuel on every little spark that's out there. And that means, you know, we now have an entire culture that is built around the perception of crime rates that's actually not congruent with what is actually happening. So then I'm going to toss it to Shiloh for that.
Well, I think, you know, certainly what we're viewing is going to inform our impression of what we think is happening, right? Excuse me. So I'm going to go through kind of from 2020 up till last year, because certainly we don't have enough information about 2023 yet, and research is always a year or so behind. Yeah. So, I mean, but a caveat on all of this, when I talk about the rise in crime in recent years, it certainly does not return us back to the astronomically high crime rates from the early 1990s, which probably seems like a really long time ago to a lot of people. And it is, I mean, it makes you feel old to say like, oh God, the 90s were a long time ago. But if you think from 1991 to 2014, the national murder rate plummeted by more than 50%. It was 9.8 to 4.4 killings per 100,000 people in that time. It went down. And just as a reference point, in 2020, the murder rate was around 6.5. So again, it was 9.8 back in the early 90s. And we certainly haven't even, you know, gotten back to that level. And the other caveat I will say is that when we hear numbers, and again, Scott and I comb through research all the time, and you really have to know what you're looking at, what the source is, right? Mm-hmm. You can't jump to conclusions too quickly and blame something that just seems easy, perhaps like, you know, newly implemented policies or reforms or something like that, that you go, oh, see, we just implemented that and see what's happening. It can't work like that. There's not enough time. There's not enough data for us to collect and make causations between that. So during the pandemic, crime did rise, particularly violent crime. The murder rate rose nearly 30%. And I'm talking all across the country, all different types of jurisdictions, big cities, little cities. There's a lot going on that we're still studying because this was a phenomenon unlike anything we've ever seen before. Mm-hmm. So the research is still definitely being conducted there. Assaults increased as well, in some places by more than 10%. And what we saw, especially with the violent crimes and the murders, is was still predominantly crimes utilizing firearms, which is, mm-hmm. you know, something that clearly is an issue here in the United States with our access. And then the violent crime that was happening during that time remained in the age group for offenders that we usually see. It's among young people. So mm-hmm. The people who were arrested for these murders, it's going to be in the 20s, age 20 to 29, which totally matches historical trends. And then in 2021, it's tough because the FBI ended up implementing, kind of rolling out this new tracking system for taking in data from law enforcement agencies around the country. And so their best estimates with that, because not everybody was reporting like they should have, they didn't know they had to switch over, all of that stuff that happens with those sort of systemic issues, is that they said that murders rose about 4% in 2021, while actually other types of violent crime declined a bit, slightly. And then in 2022, we saw that murders and gun violence actually dropped in many cities. So again, it's still a little bit, you know, having to look at the trends and how that all shakes out. But other types of traditionally violent crimes like robberies rose mm-hmm. in 2022, as well as like car thefts. And so there's a ton of hypotheses out there about, you know, why that is, post-pandemic sort of coming back out into the world with each other, during the pandemic, violent crime rising inside of households, but not necessarily outside, or when we did see the rise that was happening in cities, less population means less eyes on, you mm-hmm. know, what's going on. And so people might feel like they have more of an opportunity to commit crimes around, you know, and against the people that are actually out there. So it's a tough thing to even tackle, to talk about, because it's such a unique time in history if we're just looking at these handful of years.
Yeah. So you say that I'm asking you a tough question, but you give me a very high level doctorate type answer. And basically what I got from both of you is now I'm ticked off because my dad seems like he's right.
Oh man, sorry. I didn't know that going into it.
This has been part one of LA Not So Confidential on Public Safety Talk Radio. Part two will air next week on the next episode of our podcast.
Public Safety Talk Radio is produced by the POCUA. The POCUA is a consortium of financial institutions serving law enforcement as well as other first responders and public safety professionals. To learn more about our association and to find one of our credit unions or service providers near you, go to www.policecreditunions.com. And always remember, if you aren't working with one of our POCUA credit unions, you're just banking with an institution that just so happens to serve first responders. As a public safety professional, you and your family deserve better. Find a POCUA credit union today.